You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is me. Specifically, I'm sharing a recent interview I did with Joseph Jaffe for his innovative web series, Corona TV. I'm calling this our Thanksgiving special because to me, this was a very special conversation. We talked about some of my favorite things, like branding and Star Trek and the communication secrets of the U.S. presidents. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it, and please be sure to check out Joseph Jaffe's Corona TV on your favorite social networks. I'll be back next week with another great interview. In the meantime, happy Thanksgiving.
We are humans, we are animals, we crave the ability to be we. I know it's called me and these. We and these might have sounded differently.
Is it a disco now?
Yeah, it's the after party, so it's now we go with the flash.
My goal in life is to be a laptop sticker.
Me too.
And despite the best ministrations of your life, you still look ugly.
It's a great honor, Mr. Jaffe. It's always nice to be with
you. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm honored.
Thanks for doing this, too. It's a real service to the community.
Thank you for doing this, Joseph, for doing Corona TV in general. And it's your gift to the universe, and it's appreciated.
Very human, and I like that.
Look at you! You are insane!
How did I do that?
You're insane!
Welcome, everybody. It is Friday again. As you know the drill here, if you've been part of the show for months and months and months, every day is Friday. Yesterday was Friday. Tomorrow will be Friday again. Somehow it just creeps up on us almost like scrappy-dappy-doo over my shoulder. And you'll find out exactly why I've got Scooby and Scrappy. I can actually do a little bit of an impression of Scooby-Doo. It's not very good.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo. Yeah.
Right now, Nick Westergaard is sitting in the background going, what the hell have I gotten myself into? The man is doing terrible Scooby-Doo Scooby Snacks. Mr. David Libby is here. Mr. Tom Morris is here. Lucky Friday the 13th. Exactly. Why in 2020, Friday the 13th has to be a lucky day. And of course, hello to my mom, who's watching all the way in South Africa. Well, you know, let's get into it. Yeah, exactly, Seth. That's another one. I will stop with all these Scooby-Doo impressions right now. And Seth is excited because, you know, he's a big Iowa man, I think. You think maybe it will go in the intro. We'll see. I will keep my day job from the peanut gallery. I do appreciate it. Well, now it's time to deal with certainty, and the certainty is the certainty of a guest that knows a thing or two about a thing or two when it comes to branding. I'm talking about, of course, Nick Westergaard. Nick is a strategist, a speaker, an author, an educator. As chief strategist at Brand Driven Digital, he spent his career building standout brands at organizations from all sizes, from small businesses to Fortune 500 companies to President Obama's Job Council. He's the author of the books Brand Now and Get Scrappy, a contributor to the Harvard Business Review, host of the popular On Brand podcast, a TEDx speaker, coach, and a lecturer at the University of Iowa's Tippey College of Business, an in-demand keynote speaker at conferences throughout the world. His work helps those struggling to stand out in our crowded, distracted world. I know we all need the help. I probably need it as well. So let's bring him onto the show. Welcome, Nick.
Mr. Jaffe, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being had. No. how is life in Iowa?
Cold. You know, that's just the nature of the beast right now. So it's there's a nasty wind chill, but we've just gotta roll with it. Gotta adapt. I'm going with your limbo theme.
It's cold outside, but it's warm in here.
Exactly.
So let's get into some interesting fun facts about you. And the first, which I found very, very interesting, is actually here you are, and you're not the first Trekkie to come to the show. I found it quite interesting. But you're not just a Trekkie. I mean, you really do attend the conventions.
I guess to be fair, I'd have to put that in the right tense. I have attended. It's been a while. I've been to some Comic-Con type events recently, but in my extremely popular youth, I have attended Star Trek conventions, seen William Shatner, met Scotty, the original Scotty, James Doohan, Terry Farrell from Deep Space Nine, Majel Barrett, who played Counselor Troy's mother, and the computer voice on Star Trek The Next Generation, name a few.
The computer voice. Can you do a Scotty impression? Because, I mean, I've already embarrassed myself enough.
I feel like I have to, since I did hear the Scooby-Doo and saw Seth's rut-row. I think that right now, these days, we're all giving her all she's got.
I'll give you one more. I kind of do it, Captain. I do have the power.
I will say Simon Pegg as Brogue is very enjoyable.
So I had Bob Leides, who is the CEO of the Association of National Advertisers. He's also a Trekkie, as am I, although I've never been to a convention. What kind of surprised me in our discussion is how much Star Trek teaches us about things like leadership and diversity and inclusion. It's amazing how... And it's not just Star Trek, right? When we think about the Jetsons, when we think about all these shows that predicted the future, that gave us a glimpse, they set in the future, and yet they actually may as well have predicted the future in terms of where the world is heading.
I think you're absolutely right. So there's a few different things there, and this is so much fun to talk about. It's me sitting casually holding court in my home, which the rest of the world doesn't get to see. But no, I think there's a few different sides to that. There's absolutely what you said of the science and technology side of it. And we know that, yes, we have touch screens like the Enterprise. Our phones have really mirrored that communicator and so many other things. But I think you hit the nail on the head on the bigger issue, which is... And your previous guest as well on the leadership lessons on so many things that have been a part of Star Trek for decades, for 50, 60 years. I watched the most recent episode of Star Trek Discovery yesterday because they come out on Thursday, and I always, you know, we need a reason to have a little party these days. So to me, I make that Star Trek day, and I wore my Star Trek socks, and I had this zip-up sweater because I had a few of these meetings, but then under it, I had my Star Trek t-shirt. But in that episode, they referenced what's been an ongoing theme in the series, in the movies, about the needs of the many and the needs of the few. And I thought, wow, they're still coming back to that very important lesson. So... to be clear, because this always comes up when you talk Star Trek, I am a big Star Wars fan. I think it's not an either or. I think it's a both and. But I think that Star Wars is a great adventure series akin to, epic classics, Indiana Jones, that kind of great serialized sort of traditional sci-fi adventure. I think Star Trek... it is something a little bit bigger that can teach us some of those lessons and even some difficult ones. You go all the way back to the 60s, lessons about diversity, inclusion, things that we're very much still grappling with.
Mm. So let me ask you this question, if I may. And by the way, Seth says, the best science fiction is a genuine allegory for humanity. And he also, I think, liked the soliloquy. So thank you, Seth. Without uncertainty, there is no surprise. Well, that's, you know, that's that was also the that was also, I think, the quote of the day in yesterday's show. Instead of asking you, Nick, the obvious question, which is your favorite Star Trek and which is your favorite captain and all of that, I won't do that. What I will ask you is a branding question. This is a series that has stood the test of time. It is timeless. It is universal. And, you know, they've had maybe one series might not have performed as well as the others. But for the most part, here they are, not even just with Discovery, but with Picard and prequels and a whole generational change with a new suite of Chris Pine and actors. What do you think has given this franchise and this brand such staying power and longevity?
Well, I'm going to answer that like the shill author that I am, because I actually got to talk a little bit about Star Trek in my book Brand Now. But when I talk about brands, I talk about the seven dynamics of strong brands, of standout brands. And we were just talking about the first one of those dynamics, which is meaning, that standout brands stand for something. And I don't want to pick on Star Wars. There's themes there, but I think they are so tangible, so easy to talk about in all the things that we just talked about, that bright future, the idea of possibility, leadership, diversity. So it has meaning. I also talk about structure, kind of the key touch points of your brand. And I think though Star Trek has changed, I think that there are captains, there are leaders, which is why it's a great parallel to leadership. There are ships, there are uniforms, there are that Delta symbol that even though it's changed, and even on Star Trek Discovery, they've zoomed into the future in centuries farther ahead than Star Trek ever is, which is a challenge from a design standpoint. So it's all kinds of futuristic things. They've now got floating chairs and rooms that kind of morph around them. But you look at things like the uniform, and they are still, even as they move through time periods, they find some consistency. Story, I think, is obvious. That's the third dynamic. Content, I think we look at the interconnected Star Trek universe, and they have shows, they have movies, they have books that they're bringing into that. Where I talk about them in the book Brand Now is what I think is the most obvious and speaks to the staying power, and that's community, that they bring their community together, that, you know, Star Trek was kind of a strange one-off series in the 60s, but then it found new life in syndication and in these little Star Trek conventions that in this pre-internet era, you had people typing up newsletters and Xeroxing and distributing them and then meeting in person and making these costumes. We think about all the cool Star Trek stuff you can buy on Amazon, but it was really all of it homegrown. And I tell the story about even when it was on the air being saved by fans and a letter writing campaign that led to that third season. So I think community has always been very close. I talk about clarity, which is both that transparency and authenticity. And I think we see that woven in through the themes. And then finally, I talk about experience. And all of this in any brand is the sum total of all of those touch points, both the part of the content of the show and the world outside of that. And through conventions, through these opportunities to gather. Now, I know that especially in times of pandemic, this seems like not a great thing to maybe do immediately, but I was always, as a grown-up here, yes, I haven't been to a convention, but I've been fascinated by these Star Trek cruises that they do. I don't know that I would have had a cruise on my list, but a cruise with Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton and Kate Mulgrew, sign me up.
I met actually LeVar Burton and Brent Spiner at a CES in Vegas, and he just blew me away because he was so kind of chilled and familiar that he almost unnerved me. I remember him looking at me going, "So who are you? Are you an important guy? What do you do? Tell me about what you do. Can we work together? Can we make money together?" I'm like, "Dude, I just want your autograph." But he was great. He was great that he wasn't acting like a celebrity. And he was like, "Yeah, I'm here to network too. Damn it." You know,
well, it's, yeah. I mean, and there's all sorts. I can't pick a favorite Star Trek, but that Next Generation cast seems like a very cohesive group of people. You know, there was maybe infighting in the original series group, but boy, talk about being at an event like that. I see when they post, selfies of, all of them getting together for dinner, which it seems like they do. And it's like, I would love to pretend like I'm one of their friends for a day. I'll just disguise myself, even though I would probably have to pretend that I was Jonathan Frakes, and I'd hate to miss out on Jonathan Frakes being there. So
I think you could be a bit of a doppelganger for Frakes, and maybe I'm not sure who I would be. I give me some contact lenses, and I'll try and do my data. Now it's so funny. First of all, kudos to you because we didn't plan on discussing the branding aspects of Star Trek, and I had no idea that you profiled Star Trek in your book, and it's amazing to see how it checks all the boxes. Two points I want to add to that, and then we'll move on to maybe yet another way that I can embarrass you with very bad Photoshop. But the first thing that's interesting to me is, and they're both kind of connected, is the base. You know, in my book, Zero Paid Media as the New Marketing Model, ZERO stood for Zealots, Entrepreneurship, Retention, and Owned Assets. And to this day, I've said the quintessential best example of zero in action is, 4 years ago, the candidacy of Donald Trump and how he played and continued to play to the base. Star Trek did that too. And that's the second point, which is I forgot that they were almost canceled. And I almost wonder whether that, we look at successes today and we always overlook or forget that generally to be truly exceptional in life, you have to be on the edge. There has to be that moment where you either lived or died. Because if you weren't at that point, then you were just vanilla and you were just somewhere in the middle trying to be all things to all people. So I really love the fact that, even now when you look at CBS All Access, even though I was quite critical of them pulling this behind the walled garden. They just said, "Hey, listen, we're going to just play to the base because the base will stay true and the base will save us."
Well, it's interesting because who needs another streaming service? I mean, we've got all of these, and I guess right now during COVID, it's like I guess I'm thankful I have them, but in normal times, do I need all of these? But it's funny that you mentioned CBS All Access because it doesn't have nearly the catalog that some of the others do. And yet I viewed it, if we talk very transactionally about Star Trek, which as you can see, I have all of my heart in it all the time. But if we talk transactionally about it, how I viewed that purchase is I'm paying for Star Trek. And at that point in my life, I mean, I would go and see movies, but in terms of paying to have new Star Trek in my life, and when I look at it that way, it's absolutely a purchase I can get on board with. It's interesting. CBS All Access is kind of an odd brand and brand name in and of itself. I'm thrilled. I know this was floated out there, and then they've confirmed it about a month ago, that they're rebranding as Paramount. And I love classic movies, and I think as a brand that stands for something, I think of Paramount as a more exciting content brand to have all of this under.
Steve Garfield said, "Me too. I paid and didn't cancel after the season ended." I took more of a shifty, crafty, sneaky consumer angle, which is I waited for the entire year, And then I signed up for a monthly free subscription, and I binged on two seasons of Discovery and one season of Twilight Zone, and then I canceled. But you know what? They got the last laugh, because then Picard came back. and I'm a huge English football fan, or football fan, and so now CBS has added all the Europa and Champions League football. But I think what you said, it's spot on, right? Which is, you weren't paying for All Access, you weren't paying for CBS, you were paying for Star Trek. My fear, of course, with everything we're watching is, guess what? NBC's getting on the act with Peacock, HBO's getting. There's so much greed right now, you know, that we may go back and say we made a mistake by cutting the cord, because when we add up all these a la carte charges, it's probably three times what we're paying before.
It is. It's you know, to keep with the space theme, it's almost like something's like a body expanding. Is it going to contract? It is interesting. Yeah, all of these different a la carte things.
Very important.
Yeah. And we have some little kids still. So we haven't cut the cord. So we've got regular cable stuff, and it gives us access to a lot of other stuff. So it's just like, there's all kinds of redundancy. It's a very strange space. And I think that very question, even at the microscopic level of get this because I'm paying for Star Trek, I think there's going to be more of that. So how that all combines or goes together will be interesting to see.
My share of wallet has been assimilated. All right. So the only other thing I'm going to embarrass you about is, apparently you are known as the Indiana Jones of branding and marketing, which I just absolutely loved. So tell us why you're called the Indiana Jones, the Indy of marketing and branding.
Well, it's and thank you for this Photoshop. You didn't you know, this was a perfect picture of my body, and you messed it up and put my headshot on it, kind of askew.
Exactly.
I kid. Especially with my Corona diet here. But this actually, I wish I could take credit for it. But it was actually being on a show like this, and it's funny, we were talking about the bio at the last minute, and I was on another show, a podcast called Dream Think Do. Seth, who I know is listening, probably knows our fellow Iowan Mitch Matthews, and he dropped that in there. He is fast with the wordplay, and just pulled it together, because I do teach at the University of Iowa, and I'm also, I guess, out in the field. And my little map thing, that's what I think of a lot, is because back when we could travel, I would speak at conferences and events, and I have a university that's worked with me, and I teach a lot both on campus but online as well, that enabled me to do a lot of that. And they value that, what they call the practice track of teaching, of needing, knowing that it's valuable to have folks that are out there talking to different business groups, and then bringing that information back in as well. So I thought that explained it wonderfully. It's funny, just last night, I was flipping around, and yes, this is a strange deep cut, but I love most of the Indiana Jones movies. Wasn't a huge Crystal Skull fan. It was on TV last night when we were channel surfing, which remarkably we still do, even with all these streaming services. But stopped in on Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and caught just a little bit of it. But it was the always present scene where he's teaching at his college in his three-piece tweed suit and his bow tie. And I said to my wife, you know, I should just adopt that. Just go with tweed suits and bow ties from now on, if I really want to live up to the Indiana Jones. That would do it.
I hope you will, and come back to the show when you're ready to show off your you might get some competition from Scott Monty.
I was just thinking.
He has cornered the market on bow ties, and he's quite vicious when anyone tries to encroach in his territory. So watch out.
I will. Noted.
Now, in addition to Star Trek and Scooby-Doo and Star Wars and Indiana Jones, there's this little thing called marketing and branding that you specialize in. And I was actually watching your sizzle reel on your website. And I don't think that I've seen someone sizzle reel that was this meaty as yours. And I must have taken about 10 different notes about what it is to be a successful brand today. And obviously we can add during these times of COVID, during these times of racial tension and unrest, during these times of divisiveness, to be a brand, to pick a side, to take a position, it's pretty tough. But one of the things you actually spoke about, and I was watching in is this idea of planting a flag in the ground. Being able to have a position, take a position, you know, and own that position. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, but I also am going to give you a little bit of a caveat, an asterisk. And that asterisk is, what if the ground itself is uneven? What if the ground itself is shaky? What if the ground itself is not solid and even quicksand? Because we talk about the flag, but often we don't actually highlight the foundation that flag sits on.
That's a really good point, and I love the metaphor, and it feels applicable to the moment. I think what I like the best about the idea of planting a flag, and to flesh that out a little bit more, you have to plant a flag as to who you are and what you stand for. Standout brands stand for something. And why I like the idea of planting the flag is that it's aspirational, that it acknowledges the very imperfection that is obvious right now in times of COVID and times of unrest, that the ground is unstable. But even independent of that, by planting a flag of what you are aspiring to be, it is something directional that you're moving towards. And you may fall short. I tell a story a lot of the times about Disney, who we think of as being remarkable in terms of delivering magical experiences. But even they have plans for when they fall short. If you talk to anyone who's arrived at a resort and their room hasn't been ready, they have a chocolate made up that says apologies, it's personalized, and they get you some fast passes to go enjoy the park while they get that room ready that wasn't on time. So even Disney, who we think of as a category leader, falls short, knows they're going to fall short, and has a plan for that because that flag is even aspirational to them. So if you look at that and what that means right now, if the ground's unstable, I still think we have to keep that directionality in mind and know we might need to move it. We might need to go shore that up. That meaning of where we have it planted might change. So we may have to run out there and adjust it a little bit, as we know that this is important as something changes in society. Certainly over the summer, with all of the racial tension in the wake of the murders of George Floyd, of Breonna Taylor, and others, you know, many organizations thought, wait, this is something that we may not have expressly stated, but this is something that we want to know that we stand up in opposition to and want to fight for something better, want to listen, but maybe we weren't saying that expressly before. So I think of that as an example of a kind of adjustment of the flag in the ground that it's standing on.
I like that answer. And I actually think, as you were talking, I was thinking it almost brings us back to that soliloquy about uncertainty.
Yeah.
That if you can actually embrace, you know, the idea of letting go instead of holding on to the past or holding on to this is the way things have been done or always have been done, there is this ability to be more fluid and to have the plan B and the plan C and the plan D. And in the case of Disney, you know, anticipating what is really an inevitability, and yet so many companies haven't done that. They haven't planned for the what next or the what if or the what now.
Well, and that's another thing I talk about a lot and write about a lot when it comes to brands, because when we talk about brands, a lot of times we talk about brand consistency. And that's, you know, where we get the bad stereotype of the brand police and all the uniformity and the style guides and things like that. But I think that what's a better way of thinking of that is cohesiveness. Is not making sure everything is identical, never changes, and is consistent at that level. I think cohesiveness means it's in alignment when it comes to meaning. And I think that's more important than making sure that all the fonts are the same size and everything is organized accordingly.
Alignment in meaning, consistency versus cohesiveness. That's a really, really interesting and meaty topic. But I've used meaty intentionally because we're now going to talk about something else that I saw brilliantly highlighted in that little intro video. I mean, I would hire you based on that video alone because I would want to hear about the story of spam and your wonderful, wonderful anecdote about the spam museum. So take it away.
Well, sure. So I mentioned that we have 5 kids, and back when we could travel and I had events in the Midwest in a bordering state, we would pack everybody up and make it a little road trip, and I'd do my speaking, and then we'd do some other fun stuff along the way. So we went to a speaking event in Minneapolis, and we're driving back down I-35 back towards Iowa. And anybody who's been on that stretch of I-35 knows that around southern Minnesota and northern Iowa, you start to see some signs for the Spam Museum. And we'd seen these for years on trips, but we were on our way back. It's kind of that bummer of a feeling when the vacation's coming to an end, but we didn't really have anywhere to go. My wife and I looked at each other, thought, we don't have anywhere to go. The world is our oyster. Today is the day we visit the Spam Museum. So we pulled over and first found out in navigating to the Spam Museum that this is the second location. It's because the Spam Museum is so popular that they had to make a bigger Spam Museum. And you walk in, you've shown a couple of photos of it. It looks like the New York Stock Exchange of spam. There are great big displays. There are interactive activities for your kids. There are hallways dedicated to how spam is used in the world. And I've said spam so many times, it's worth a reminder that this is a curious little meat product that comes in a strange metal container. And it has this packed museum. So I tell this story, which could seem like a bit of a rambling tale, but I tell it as a wind-up to talking about brand experience, because this is something that we drop the ball on so much. And yet, here is Spam, again, curious meat product, that has built a thriving experience around their brand. And then I leave a pause and I say, if Spam can do this, why can't you? But we can't with our business, with our industry, because I would say whatever your hangup is, whatever you think, oh, we're a small dentist's office in the Pacific Northwest, we couldn't do anything interesting. Look at Spam. So look for how you can have fun and really turn your brand experience up to 11 like they have.
For sure. And I was thinking the second Spam Museum, would that have been spammier than the first one?
Are there
degrees of spam? Joey DeMont says, as a Minnesotan, we took field trips to the Spam Museum as kids. And Leslie says there are spam food trucks in Hawaii. Joey says he can still smell the factory floor.
I don't know if I want that kind of brand experience.
You know, it's so interesting going even back to what you spoke about, which is this idea of cohesiveness. It was a topic that actually Seth brought up yesterday in a video response, this concept of harmony. And Tom says harmony arises again as a central concept for brands harmony rather than strict consistency, resonance and almost the attraction of singing and being on the same wavelength. And I just thought it was very interesting because, you know, the thing about spam is, even though you said, you know, if this works for spam, then is there a brand on this planet that it wouldn't work for? In a way, it almost works better for them because there is that identity. Because they've instead of trying to be something that they're not, they're basically saying, you know, choose me as I am, embrace me for who I am, and double down on that purity as opposed to the inevitable dilution of trying to stand out in a world and a sea of clutter.
I agree. And I think what you just kind of plotted out is an important set, because you can imagine the thinking, and I don't know what the story is, and I would love to learn it. A quick aside, I had just started teaching a new winter condensed course at the University of Iowa. And one of my students messaged me and he said, I was just doing the same thing you were doing and researching you, looked at your video, saw the thing about the spam museum. I am the brand manager at Spam. So I'm hoping to learn more. But I think what's interesting to me is that instead of those hangups, and this is what I think anybody can do, is if you think about what Spam did, is they took whatever that hangup was, and it's almost like they asked, what if how we make our product is the most interesting thing in the world? What if our history, you could do a whole museum about, and they have a museum section that you walk through about the role that Spam played in feeding troops during various wars.
I was thinking, I've tried to articulate this. It's the purity of identity versus the dilution of conformity. The ability to deviate and venture or wander too far from that life force, which, you know, going back to Star Trek, I feel like we're back the Prime Directive again.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Prime Directive is a great example of something like that. But yeah, I do think you have to have a central brand ethos in which to build that around. But I love the idea that Tom mentioned on harmony versus consistency. Because let's also acknowledge since we're talking about branding, that branding is hard. It's this weird thing. I think it's as much an art as a science. And we look for ways to get our arms around it and make it easy to manage. And I think that's where the consistency thing has come in. Oh, great. So we have this thing now. That means everything should look like that. It means everything should sound like that. And we take this kind of sweeping approach. That harmony that you and Tom are talking about is a lot harder. But I think the results pay off in a bigger way.
The idea, which is a very original thought to me, that consistency, we've always spoken about brand consistency as being a consumer-centric type of benefit. Everything looks the same, acts the same, does the same Pantone colors. You go into McDonald's in, you know, Beijing versus one in Berlin, you know. But I never thought of it that it's almost laziness. It's almost an indication of laziness that brands are saying, if we look the same and act the same and and walk the same and talk the same, that's going to just make my job and my life easier as opposed to my consumers.
Yeah. But again, I think it helps us reduce our anxiety around this weird thing to understand that is the brand. I mean, we can't look at it like a P&L sheet. It is nebulous. It's hard to get your arms around. So yeah, it makes our lives easier when we opt for that consistency. But it also, you talk about the emotional level, it reduces our anxiety. I know I'm controlling it because it all looks the same.
And I can give two examples actually of brands that have followed in a way maybe the path that you're talking about, as opposed to the everything looks and feels and acts the same. One is Google, with respect to every single day their logo is bastardized and their logo changes on their homepage. And the other one actually is McDonald's. The whole I'm loving it campaign, every single jingle, every ending to every commercial is almost different based on the audience, based on the context, as opposed to the same sonic branding that people say, you know, the Intel Inside chime.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned McDonald's and you mentioned them twice, and you were talking about the differences or lack of differences in different locations throughout the world. But it's interesting. I actually talked with some folks from McDonald's on my podcast, and an idea that they gave me, especially in the global markets, they talked about flexibility within frameworks. So I think McDonald's is a good example of a brand that does bend and does adapt and still manages to, as you note, be McDonald's. I mean, they have a very different targeted approach for different audience segments, but they're still able to tie that up in the sonic branding, especially that cue, how subtle it's gotten. I mean, there's the whole kind of big version of it, but they've really got a little, like you said, a little snippet of it there that's almost kind of akin to the Intel Inside.
Matthias Perel, good to see you, Matthias. There's a story which I'll tell in the Zoom after show of Matthias and I. It's one of the most bizarre, surreal, awesome stories. But good to see you. He said local campaigns outperform global campaigns almost always in our experience. But I want to move on to something that you've become known for. And I think Seth has been referring to you maybe as Mr. Scrappy, or maybe I started calling you Mr. Scrappy. But I love this concept, this book, this concept of scrappiness. And I would love for you to share some thoughts about this book. I know that, and I'm glad that you got a chance to talk about brand now as well. I will provide, while you're answering, I'll provide links to both of the books on Amazon. But I almost feel like I would love to hear your definition of what it is to be scrappy. And then maybe a follow-up, which is during now this age of COVID, is it more or less important to be a scrappy dappy do brand?
Yeah, well, I'll start with just my general approach to scrappiness. Now, being an unfocused strategic type, meaning that I don't focus on dentists in the Pacific Northwest. I work with small businesses, Fortune 500 clients, because I like the diversity of the challenges, the teams, and everything else. But in doing that, what I found is that this idea of scrappiness transcends that, because and it's a story that I tell in the book. When I was working with the folks at Schwinn, the bicycle company, and I was talking about scrappiness, and every now and then you, in traditional settings, people think scrappy, small business, and they think anybody bigger, and we can get into the odd definition of what's bigger, has it made, doesn't have to worry about scrappiness. And at Schwinn, Samantha Herschel, who is their digital marketing manager, said, when I was talking about this, she was nodding and she's like, that's so true. Because, you know, we could all use a few people and a few dollars more. I think even before COVID, I don't think that there was a marketing team out there that could answer that point of Sam's of saying, yep, I have all the dollars I want. Yep, I have all the people that I want. So we're trying to do more with less. And the more has only gotten bigger over the past few years with all of the different digital channels, all of the forms of content, and all the different places that your audience is. It's impossible to keep up with. And of course, the less took a hit this year as COVID has challenged our resources, challenged our reach, and challenged where our audience is. So I think there was a case for scrappy before. I think there's definitely a case for scrappy now.
I think that the way I would almost paraphrase that is scrappiness is a bit of a mindset. But to your point, and I've encountered this as well, we foolishly, mistakenly assume that big brands have got big budgets and big bucks, which they do. But when you actually understand how all of these five items, we will say, but the, you know, Budweiser took out 7 Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah.
Except that you realize that each budget owner is in a different silo, and you know, and so when even a great idea brought to them, pitched to them opportunistically, may actually have less of a budget than you or I have.
Yeah, but and it's all relative too. I mean, you look at the they bought these handful of Super Bowl ads, but look at the available market of people who drink light beer. I mean, it's big versus what your market is as a plumber in Baton Rouge. See, I had to move from the dentist in the Pacific Northwest. I felt like I was picking on them.
They thank you for moving on. Now the quote of the day, I want to put this up on the screen, which is I just edited it slightly without changing the meaning. There's a view that adding process into a scrappy startup kills innovation, but you need process at some point to remain agile. And any idea as to who said that? I always ask.
No, I don't think I did.
You didn't say it, but this was Belinda Johnson, an attorney and also the COO of a scrappy startup called Airbnb. But as I looked at this quote, and because we were talking about scrappiness, I was wondering about the relationship between process, scrappiness, and agility, and how they all work together. What do you think about that relationship and how they interplay, enforce, or reinforce one another?
I think they absolutely reinforce one another, and that there's a lot of interplay. And in my approach, my system to marketing scrappiness kind of addresses this head on, because I think there's a misconception, probably calling into need a quote like this one, that scrappiness is just doing bam, 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 quick and dirty. And I think that where I start with this, and it's funny because it's actually a section of the book that the publisher renamed, because I think I had an overly cute way of framing it. And my editor just said to me, I think that what you're trying, these are the smart steps you can't skip. And I think that that's an important bit of grounding to start anything. Because when you're talking about getting scrappy, you're talking about doing more with less. And to be able to do that, you have to start with some kind of a strategic foundation of what it is you're trying to do. So you have to answer those questions first and put a process in place to address them, to be able to actually realize upon that promise.
Jan says scrappy is not thinking you can sit back, but I like the fact that process, agility, and scrappiness actually do have a really interesting relationship and even codependency. So we have time to just briefly touch on one more topic, which to me, this could have been part of your fascinating background, which is presidential communication. And tell us what it is. What does this mean that you are a presidential communicator? What is that? What is presidential communication?
Well, it's funny because Seth and I are here in Iowa. And as I said this to you in explaining the backstory, you know, we have a very specific set of job seekers visiting our state every 4 years. And it's something we take seriously and try to get out there and see folks. And as I was kind of walking this back in my head, I feel like most of the people that have been president recently or the nominee in the past several years, I've had an opportunity to see up close and personal. Now, I also teach communication skills at the Tippie College of Business, a weird offshoot of me traveling and speaking at conferences so much was someone realized in wanting to connect some dots and empower our students with some more of those skills that I might be a good person to tackle that. And being a fan of presidential history, I point to examples. I mean, we do a lot of in our executive and professional MBA program, and looking at these examples from our chief executives is interesting. And I'm a fan of history. And in looking back, if you look at C-SPAN's historian survey of presidents, you can see they rank all the presidents and then they break them out by different subcategories. But if you look at the overall rankings, see our best presidents, and then look at the breakout skill of public persuasion, AKA communication, you can see that the order or that the grouping of presidents doesn't really change. The order changes a bit, but it supports this idea that our best presidents have been the most effective communicators. So I've been researching this for fun over the past couple of years and had the opportunity to deliver this speech at a few different conferences and to do some speaking and writing about this topic.
I would like to continue this discussion in our Zoom after show today, because the one question, and I'll ask it, but I'll save it for the actual after show, is based on all the people you've met, and you've met many of these job seekers, which were the ones that what you saw is what you got? They're how they acted, how they interacted, how they connected at the Iowa State Fair, or you know how that translated. But there is one thing that I do want to just add. I think it's interesting when we look now, obviously at this particular moment in time, Trump v. Biden, that Trump's communication style, the getting off teleprompter, the rallies, it was consistent with his message, which is I'm not one of, you know, I'm different. I'm not of the insider. I'm not of the swamp, etc. Whereas what I see now, and we're discussing this before, what Biden has done is everything has been very by the book, memos and official releases. And, you know, when he talks, you're going to listen because he's not going to talk often. So you had one candidate talking very often as he possibly could get airtime. And the other saying, when I talk, you're going to know it's important because it's not going to happen often. And I just think from a brand standpoint, they both appear to have been true to their brand promise.
And of thinking about, because I thought about this, what does this mean? This is so different. And they were really neck and neck there. And I think, like a lot of the branding conversation we've had, that a big part of it is focusing on how they make their audiences feel. And I think you've got a power dynamic with Trump. I think you've got an empathy dynamic with Biden, but both are focused on how they make the people that follow them feel.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And if we know one thing about branding, it is all about feel versus functional benefit. I wish we had more time, and thankfully we have a little bit more time in the Zoom after show, but now comes the time where I get to pick your brain one more time. So I'm just going to put the bits.ly/coronaTV after show. That is the link to our after show. This week, we've been running with a question of the week, a corona question, if you will. And the corona question is, what will you tell your grandkids about this particular time that we're living in? I would say specifically leading up to and through the election and where we are as a country. But if you want to answer it in terms of 2020, it is Friday the 13th. The floor is yours.
I don't want to chance it. It is Friday the 13th. But I think that what we'll tell our grandchildren is this is such a critical time. And what my wife and I, your grandmother and I, tried to do was to be off the bench, into the game, and involved. That's why we again, even back in the retail politics of the Iowa caucuses, would get out, would see people. And once we did find candidates that we support, we tried to spread and share that support too, that it's a very important time with all of the, with COVID, with racial unrest, to be a part of things rather than someone commenting on wonderful, the sidelines.
Wonderful. Being the driver, being the pilot and not necessarily the passenger, the spectator. Fantastic answer. Well, this has been Nick Westergaard, as opposed to Vestergaard, that brings his Danish heritage into play. But you can call him, of course, his alter ego, which we know is the Indiana Jones of branding and marketing. Nick, you can connect with him on LinkedIn. I will put that up. You can find out more about him at nickwestergaard.com. You can follow him on the Instagram and the Twitter. You can buy his books and his t-shirts and the pie if you so choose. It tastes great from what I've heard. And one more thing as well, in addition to the books, you have a podcast called On Brand. Tell us a little bit about the podcast and anything else that you want to share before we head on over.
It is a podcast talking with folks that are working in the trenches, building interesting brands, hopefully spam someday. But I've talked with folks from a lot of the brands we've talked about, like McDonald's, Ben and Jerry's, Maker's Mark, the Minnesota Vikings. So lots of interesting brands and conversations with other authors and experts.
Wonderful. And I forgot one more title for you, given to you by your children, Amateur Presidential Historian. How could I forget?
Well, I'm not sure that that was mentioned in an incredibly affectionate way, but I'm going to take it and run with it.
You better, because there's only affection when it's connected to you. Thank you for coming in and spending time. It's great to meet you and connect with you like this. And in the words of the immortal friend of the show, Chuck Norris.
You are Chuck Norris approved.
I'll see you guys on Monday, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Corona TV with your host, multiple author, and global keynote speaker, Joseph Jaffe. Corona TV is the show about hope, positivity, optimism, and if there's time left over, a little bit of marketing. The after show on Zoom starts right now at bit.ly/CoronaTV Aftershow. If you like the show, tell a friend or two. Please subscribe to the show at coronatv.show. And if you want to get inside news, previews of upcoming guests, and much more, text Corona TV to 66866 or visit josephjaffe.com/subscribe to sign up for the show's newsletter.
And despite the best ministrations of your life, you still look ugly.
And that was my Corona TV interview. I hope that that was a lot of fun for you. And if you want to watch the video of this, I've embedded that as well as links for how to find all of Joseph's great content at onbrandpodcast.com. Now, you have a new episode of Corona TV coming up next week, also a new episode of the On Brand Podcast. But in the meantime, happy Thanksgiving, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.